Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah Daf Chof. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. At the end of the previous shiur, we were describing or explaining the din of the Mishnah that said, "Ein moichun lehem b'bechur b'lekarka." This was the Mishnah found at the bottom of Yud Tes Amud Beis. The Gemara asked at that point, "What is the mukar for this prohibition?" And Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina cited a pasuk, "Lo Seichonim," and this pasuk was interpreted as the word Seichonim was "Lo Sitein Lahem Chanoya Bakarka," not to give them a holding on the land. The word Chanaya is similar to the word, or has the same shoresh, the same root as the word Machane. Machane is an encampment, and in our case, it has to do with a land holding. It was with that point that we concluded the previous shiur. We did not mention at the time the markings that we see here at the top of Daf Chof. We will now take the opportunity to introduce the markings by looking at the outside margin in our Gemara markings, in our Shas Ozer. We attempt to provide per sugya the topic heading and also a structural note regarding the geometric forms that you will encounter. So in this case, we have the topic heading and structural note combined in the Nosei Mivneh. One will note there's a double underline. That's one of our series markings, as are all the other geometric forms that we employ. Sidra shel halachos shenilmedu me'apasuk lo seichonim. The Gemara will present a series of halachos that are derived from the same pasuk. We might note that in general, one is not entitled to derive two halachas from one pasuk. In this case, the Gemara will point out some nuances in this particular, in the spelling of the word, or in the pronunciation of this word, that will enable us to in fact derive several things from the same words. We will also see a triangle in this little piece of Gemara. The triangles are kushios al hadrosha shekodam lo. So each time the Gemara will present a drosha, some type of derived law that is learned from the pasuk, and following that there will be a question on that which was said. So after having said that Lo Seichonim teaches Lo Sitem Lahem Chanoya Bakarka, not to give to them, to the Gentiles, a holding of that which is attached to the land, we ask on the second line from the top, Hi Lo Seichonim, this Pasuk Mi Boyele Tohach Kam Rachmona, it is really needed for something else. Lo Sitem Lahem Chain. Rashi at the top says, "Lo sitenum chaim shelo yomar kama oivei kechovim ze noe," not to offer words of compliment regarding Gentiles. And the Rashi cites as an example to say how beautiful this particular Gentile person is. So the Gemara answers, "Im kain." If the posik was designed just for that, so leimakra, the posik could have said, "Lo sichunim." That would have been more grammatically exact regarding lo sitein lemchein. My lo seichonim. What is the kavona? What's the intent of saying the pasuk in this way? Shma mino tarti. From the fact that the Torah chose this particular pronunciation, that we have the right, therefore, to derive both restrictions, namely lo sitein chanoi bakaka, and also lo sitein lemchein. The Gemara asks, but is it not so that I still need this pasuk for something else? Do I not need it for the following that the Torah is teaching me? Lo sitein lohem matnas shel chinam, that one is not allowed to offer idol worshippers gifts. In other words, one is not allowed to give something to a Gentile for nothing, for free. So the Gemara says, "Im Kain." If that's what the role of the pasuk was, "Lema kra lo sechinom," and you can see in this pronunciation, you see the word "chinom" for free. Lo my lo sechonim. What is conveyed by spelling the word and pronouncing it thusly? Shma mino kulhu. We therefore have a right to derive all of these teachings from the same pasuk. Tanya nami hachi. We have a Tanaic source that supports this approach, namely that the one pasuk of Lo Sechonim is the source for these three different halachas. We now see a framed section. In our marking system, the framed section represents Tanaic material. In this case, we have a brisa that will support that which we just said. Lo Sechonim equals Lo Sitem Chanoi Bakaka. Dovar Acher, another drasha. Lo sechonim, lo sitain lohem chain, not to give them compliments. And dover acher, lo sechonim, lo sitain lohem matnas chinam, that one is not allowed to give them gifts for free. Turning to this last point, the Gemara says that this itself, the issue of giving them a gift for free, is itself a Tanaic controversy. We've also featured this on the side, in the outside margin under our new topic heading, the Nosei, Machlokes Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, we have written in. We have a controversy between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, Haim Osir Loseis Matnas Chinam Legoi. Is it forbidden to give a gift to a Gentile? And we will see that Rabbi Meir holds it's allowed, and Rabbi Yehuda says Osir. The brisa here, as you can see, we have another framed section, opens up with a pasuk. We will also see in the brisa itself the use of a diamond, and this is to help emphasize or help stand out the words ger and nochri. Ger is a reference to a ger toshav. That means it's a person who has who is not Jewish but has accepted upon himself to fulfill the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws, because God commanded thusly. And that's a Ger Toshav. And that's as opposed to a Nochri, who is a standard Gentile, but someone who was not Mekabel upon himself Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. The Pasuk talks about what does one do with nevela meat. Nevela is meat that is from an animal that did not receive a proper slaughtering. Either the animal died or there was some kind of problem involved in its slaughter. Loi soichlu kol nevela lager asher b'sherecha titmena v'achla oi mechor lanochri. The Pasuk says that one is not allowed to eat, a Jew is not allowed to eat such meat, but unto a ger, this is the ger toshav that we referred to a moment before, that lives amongst us, he is to be given this meat, titneno v'achla, he can eat it, because consumption of nevela meat is not restricted upon the b'nei noach. Another option, the pasuk says, or it can be sold to a Gentile. The Gemara goes on, or the Brisa goes on, and says, according to the very simple reading of the Pasuk, the Torah is giving us only these options, namely, the Ger can receive it as a gift, but the idol worshipper cannot receive it as a gift, but it is sold to him. What about switching these things around? How about that? How about giving it to, selling it to a Ger? Is that acceptable? To have the nevela meat sold to a ger toshav. Minayim, from where do we know that it is allowed? Talmud Loimar. The Pasuk says, what we are going to do right now is read what we've written in between the lines, because these are the lead-up words to what's printed in the Gemara. The Pasuk says, La ger asher b'sherecha titnena, and then you skip a few words and you read, O mechor. So the pasuk is saying that as far as the ger is concerned, there is the option of giving it to him or selling it to him, because you can read the pasuk just like that. If you go back three lines up and spot where you see the word lager, and it says lager shibesh rechatz neno v'yachla oy mechor. In other words, you would stop right before the word lenochri, and then the two options of titneno and mechor can be attached to the word lager. Continuing in the brisa, le'ovei kechov ben asino minayin, from where can we derive this idea that you're able to give it as a gift to an idol worshiper? And this will be the source, or this will be the opinion that says it is mutter to give a matnas chinam to a nochri, to a goy. Talmud loimar, the pasuk says, titneno v'ochlo o mechor lenochri. In other words, you would choose as your starting point in the pasuk the word titneno, and you would read, it can be given or sold to a nochri. So you see the option of titneno associated with nochri, with the idol worshiper. Nimtzo ata omer, the result of this approach, I call it the slide rule approach to darshaning the pasuk, is you result in saying echod ger ve'echod oyve kechovim bein benasino bein b'mechira. Divrei Rabbi Meir, whether it be a ger toshav or an idol worshiper, both options are available, whether it be giving it to him as a gift or selling it to him. Rabbi Yehuda omer dvorim kiksavim. Rabbi Yehuda is restrictive. He says the pasuk is to be read and to be derived as it is written, namely la ger ben asino l'oyve kichovim b'mechira. The Gemara asks Shapir Komer Rabbi Meir, but Rabbi Meir's approach seemed to be even better, because even without moving any words around in the pasuk, just by picking a different starting point, we were successful in showing that both options exist with both people. So the Gemara is asking, why does Rabbi Yehuda feel that the pasuk is to be derived or to be learned in such a restrictive fashion? Rabbi Yehuda Omar Loch, Rabbi Yehuda responds, in our marking system, we often employ the use of a squiggle underline to indicate a type of back and forth discussion. In order to follow the names to determine who the speaker is, we use this marking. We use, of course, the squiggle underline for other things as well, but in this case, if you just scan down a couple of lines, you'll see how Rabbi Yehuda appears, and then Rabbi Meir responds, and Rabbi Yehuda follows again after that. So here, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Loch, Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, Yi sakadaitoch kiduka Amar Rabbi Meir, if Rabbi Meir's reading is the true way, then lichtoiv rachmona, the pasuk should have said as follows: titneno ve'ochlo umechor. However, oi, which appears in the pasuk, the word or, the word oi, lomali, what is it doing in the pasuk? Shma mino, the word o, which is a word indicating some type of, we'll say, an alternative or a distinction. So the fact that that word appears in the pasuk, shma mino lidvorim kiksovim huda'asa, it's there to show me that the pasuk is to be read in the restrictive or in the limited fashion. Rabbi Meir, who, as we must recall, says that both options exist. In other words, it's not, the pasuk is not so restrictive. Then the word oi, what is it doing? Hahu, the role of that word of oi is la'akdume nesino deger lemechira davikuchavim. That even though both options of transfer of meat are available with regard to each individual mentioned in the pasuk, nevertheless there is an order of preference, and the preference is that everything else being equal, we prefer your giving it as a gift to the ger than your selling it to the idol worshipper. Rabbi Yehuda, what about the issue of precedence or priority? What about priority as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned? We're assuming right now that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that the better of the two options is to give it as a gift to the ger. So what does he say about this? How does he derive it? If the word oi, according to him, served a different role, not to suggest priority, but rather to suggest restrictiveness, so where does he learn the concept or the idea of giving priority to the gift to the ger. So he answers, he says, I don't need a pasuk to show that. I don't need a word to show that. Kevon de ger ata mitzuva l'achyaso, since the Torah expects us to sustain and support and assist the ger toshav living in our midst, uknani yata mitzuva l'achyaso, and the idol worshiper that lives in our midst, we are not commanded to assist. The haktim lo tzorchra. Therefore, the idea of preferring the giving of the gift to the giving of the gift of meat, of nevela meat, to the ger doesn't require a special pasuk. I could figure that out based on the fact that a ger, I am mitzuve lachio, so I am commanded to offer him assistance. Dovar acher, lo sechonem, lo sitem lemchein. If one has any doubts of where this is coming from, we've supplied an arrow in the margin, in the space, in the immediate right left-hand side of the Gemara text, and if you skim up the page, also on the left-hand side, you will encounter the parallel arrow. So we saw in the source that lo sechonem is not to offer them compliments. Messiah lay l'rav. This Tanaic source supports Rav. Yoma Rav, also lodem shiemar kama noa oivedes kechavim zu. It is forbidden for a person to say, how beautiful is this Gentile woman? Meisvei, we have a Tanaic source where we see some great rabbis meeting up with a Gentile woman, and they express their appreciation of her beauty. Meisvei, the following source will seem to question that which Rav just said. Maisa b'Shimon Liel shohoyo al gabi ma'ale b'harabayis. There was an incident with Rav Shimon Liel ascending to the Temple Mount, to the Harabayis. V'ro'a oivedes kechovem achas no'a b'yoyser. He saw an exceptionally attractive Gentile woman. Omar, upon seeing her, he said, Ma rabu ma'asecho Hashem. How wondrous are your workings, or your creations, O Almighty. The Afra Bikiva raw Ashes Turnus Rupus Arasha. On another occasion, Rabbi Akiva saw the wife of the evil Turnus Rupus. Rok Sochakubocha. Upon seeing her, he did three things. He spit, he laughed, and he cried. And to explain each one of these actions, the Brisa goes on. Rok Shoisabo Mitipa Srucha. He, even though she was an exceptionally attractive woman, he recounted where a human being originates. What is the beginning of a human being? And it's from a droplet of zera. Sochak, he laughed. Dasida de Megaira Venosivlo. He knew through divine inspiration that she eventually was going to convert to Judaism, and he would marry her. And Bocha, he cried. The high shufra boli afra. He cried over the end, the finality of of this beauty eventually being decomposing into the dirt of the ground upon death. The question for our purposes is: we see here the noticing of an exceptionally attractive Gentile woman, and Rav Shimon Gamliel's reaction was one of a seemingly complimentary nature, where he said, "Ma rabu ma'aseh Hashem." So the Gemara answers: there is no kasha on Rav. V'Rav. So what does Rav say about this? Oidoye hu de kamoide. Rav Shimon Gamliel was praising God. He wasn't complimenting the Gentile, but rather he was saying praise of God. The Mishnah in Brocha says that one who sees beautiful creatures, Omer Boruch Shekocha Loi Bo'ilomo. So we see that the Chazal instituted special brochas for as praise to God for beautiful creations. The Gemara now asks another question concerning the story. The story mentioned that they saw, the two rabbis, Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva, saw beautiful women. The Gemara asks, "Ule istakule mishari? Is it in fact allowed to gaze upon women?" Mesve, we have the following Tanaic source, and from this source we will see that gazing upon women is something that is Torah forbidden. Mesve, nishmarta mikoldova ra. That's a pasuk that means one should guard himself from all bad. And we learn from this, shelo yistakel adam, a person should not gaze upon the isha noav afilu pnuya, upon a beautiful woman, even if she is not married. The eshes ish vafilu michueres, and if she is a married woman, one must not gaze upon her, even if she is uncomely, even if she is ugly. Veloy bevigdei tseva shel isha, nor is one allowed to look at the colored garments of a woman belonging to a woman. Rashi at the top says, "Velo bevigdei tseva shel isha shezocher so isha kemoshi melubeshes." He, upon looking at her clothing, even if she's not wearing them right now, they're hanging on a clothesline. But if he looks upon them, he gazes upon her clothing, he will reconstruct in his mind what she looks like when she's wearing them. Shemiyapano sa, because the colorful clothing increased the beauty of its owner, of the one who's wearing it. Umahara achara, and that will cause him to have thoughts concerning her, and the thoughts that one has when preoccupied, when a male has thoughts concerning women, and he becomes preoccupied with her, this is something that is forbidden. It can lead to hoitsoas zera, which is a very negative event, we'll say, or negative happening. Velo, furthermore, another restriction is velo b'chamor, velo b'chamora, velo b'chazir, velo b'chazira, velo b'oifos, bizman shenizkokin ze lo ze, v'afilu mole einayim kemala chamoves. One is not allowed to look upon donkeys when they're mating, nor look upon pigs, nor birds when they are mating, when male and female are coming together, even if those creatures happen to be frightening in their appearance. The example cited here is, even if they're full of eyes like the angel of death. Omru alav al malach hamavis. Once we made reference to the angel of death, the Brisa goes on and comments that the angel of death is shekulo mole einayim. He is filled with eyes. Bishas p'tirosu shechoyla, when a person's end has come. Oimed me'al mirashosov, the angel of death stands above his head. V'charbo yishlufo biyadoi, and he has a drawn sword in his hand. The tipo shel mora tluya bo, and there's a droplet of bitterness that is dripping, or that is hanging or suspended from the end of his sword. Kevan shechoyle roya oisoi, when the ill individual who notices the presence of the Malach HaMoves, Mizdazea, he becomes shocked and shaken up, Uposeach Piv, and opens his mouth out of shock, the Zorkolosok Piv, and the angel of death, the Malach HaMoves, casts that drop, that Tipa Shomora, into the mouth of the person, Mimeno Meis, Mimeno Masriach, Mimeno Ponov Morikos. We have underlined each one of the things that this drop causes. The mimena, from it, a person dies. From it, a person decays and becomes the foul odor of a decomposing body is associated with this tipa shamora. And mimena ponov morikos. And this droplet of the tipa shamora is responsible for the change in complexion and color of the face of the deceased. At this point, we notice that we have come to the end of a long question. We may have noted earlier, but it's never too late. If you look at the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you'll notice a dashed vertical line which began at the bottom of Chof Amud Aleph when the Gemara introduced the Mesve. So with the assistance of this marking, we see we've come to the end of a question, but the question was a long question. The question being, how is it that these rabbis, if you're telling me that they, on the one hand, you're telling me in the story that they saw these very attractive women, on the other hand, we have a warning against gazing upon women. So how is it that they did what they did? The Gemara answers
Karen Zovis Havoi. The rabbis encountered the women while rounding a corner. They were about to turn the corner and they immediately met up with the women. They didn't have a chance to notice them from the distance, because if one does notice an attractive woman coming from the distance, he is required, we expect the person to be nishmarta mikol dovara, to watch, to guard oneself, and to turn the other way or close one's eyes when they draw near. But since they were coming around the corner, in the case of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, they didn't have that opportunity, and so there was an immediate meeting with these women, and it was at that moment that they noticed their beauty, and they did not say compliments to the women. That would have been forbidden based on Lo Tzechonein. But what they did do was they blessed God for having created such attractive beings. We learned at the top of this Amid the restriction of looking at the colored garments of a woman. And we pointed out, even if she's not wearing them, they may be hanging on a clothesline, but when one notices these colored garments, he then is maharer. He conjures up in his mind the appearance of the woman while wearing it, and thinks about the woman, and that can lead to negative things, negative emissions from the man that is thinking about her. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Afilu Shtuchin Al Gabi Koisel. What the Gemara says here is what we incorporated in our explanation above, that the prohibition of looking at the colored garments of a woman is not only while she's wearing them, but even if they are hanging over a wall set out to dry from the wash. Omra Papa Uvemakir Balehem. This restriction is true only if one knows the woman who owns, he recognizes the woman who owns these garments. This is, of course, opposed to, let us say, someone is visiting a town whom he doesn't recognize in that community, and he notices clothing on clotheslines. There would be no restriction of looking at those clothing. The whole issue is, as we explained before, the association of the clothing with the woman who is the owner of them and wears them, and that leading to the negative thoughts and images. Omar Rava, Daiko Nami Dekotoni. If you read the source carefully, you will see this point is alluded to in the reading itself. The pasuk says, the source says, "Velo bebigdei tzeva shel isha." This was the quote from the top line of the Gemara. That's the expression it uses. It says shel isha velo katoni. It doesn't say velo bebigdei tzivonim. It doesn't offer a general restriction of a general nature concerning all colored women's clothing. That's not the case, because that's not forbidden. What is forbidden is only the looking at the colored garments of that are owned by a woman that you know, that you recognize. Shma Amino. This is conclusive. Omar Rav Chisda, Hani Mili. The restriction that we just mentioned of looking at the colored garments of a woman that you know, that's the atiki, that's with old ones. Namely, these are garments that she's already worn, and I've seen her wearing these garments. And then when I notice the garments again, I then start to conjure up her look, her image in my mind. However, avol bechadati, if they are new garments which she never wore, and you happen to notice them, so you might in fact know the owner of them, because you know the woman who just bought the garments, but you never saw her wearing them. Les lon ba, there is no restriction in looking at the new clothing that she bought. The ilo temahochi, this if you don't say thusly. What the Gemara does right now is tries to offer a support to this distinction that Rav Chisda made, the difference between clothing already worn and new clothing. Because if you don't accept this distinction, anan mono la'ashpuri hechi yahavinon. How can we give clothing? Mono is clothing. La'ashpuri, he is a person who fixes new garments. Rashi says, koyves hamesakein begodim chadoshim. He's a watchman that that does tailoring on new clothing. We give these clothing to a to the koveis, to the artisan, to the professional. Well, how can we give it to him? Heichi yavinon, how is it that we're allowed to give it to him? Ha ka mistakel, does he not look at the clothing, the koveis himself? And yet we don't seem to be worried about that. So the reason for that is because in receiving new clothing, the koveis, when he looks at them, he sees new clothing and he doesn't associate them with the one who's giving it to them, because she hasn't worn them yet. So at this point, the Gemara feels that from the case of the koveis, that we can prove the allowance of the new clothing, the new colored clothing, that one is allowed to look at them. However, the Gemara is doche this support to Rav Chisda. And you'll notice the rejection, the doche, the chia, is illustrated on the left-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice a dalet that appears encircled with a vertical dashed line. These four lines of Gemara are designed to reject the support to Rav Chisda from the case of the koveis, or what the Gemara calls the ashpuri. Ule tamech ha di omar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, min b'minoi mutar lahachnis kemacho b'shoferes. A person who is raising animals, if they are two of the same variety of animals, a male goat and a sheep and a female goat, or a male sheep and a female sheep, a person who's raising animals is allowed to insert the male organ into the female's body for the purpose of reproduction. And the term used in this analogy is kemakol b'shoferes. A makol is an applicator that's parallel to the male organ. B'shoferes is a tube, an applicator that's placed in a tube that is analogous to the female. So the halach of Rav Yehuda is that one is allowed to physically make this insertion, connecting the male to the female. But ha komistakel, is it not so that he is looking? And we saw above in the source that one is not allowed to gaze upon creatures when they are mating. How is this allowed? Elo ba'avidite torid. Rather, the explanation is that since he is involved with his work, with his preoccupation, with his income, he's involved, he's torid, he's preoccupied with his avoda. And as a result of being preoccupied with his avoda, he wants to have these animals mate successfully so he can produce offspring. He is not thinking about other thoughts. Other thoughts are not entering his mind while he is doing this. He is preoccupied on the simple, successful joining. Hochinami, so too in the case of the koveis, the avidite torig, he's preoccupied with mending the clothing, or with the fixing the clothing, altering the clothing, and as a result of that, he is preoccupied with his work. He has no chance to engage in all kinds of thoughts. However, if it were someone else that's not involved with their work, and it's just a question of someone looking upon newly acquired colored clothing, we couldn't necessarily come to a conclusion of leniency. In other words, to say this once again, if Rav Chisda is going to base his halacha on the ashpuri or the koveis, it really is insufficient evidence. The koveis being someone different, he has a special allowance. He's ba'avidite torid, but someone else is not in the same position, so we can't make that allowance for others. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the outside margin. Tipa shel mora, the droplet of bitterness, shel malach hamoves, that's at the end of the sword of the angel of death. Omar mar, imeno meis, it's from that drop of bitterness, the tipa shel mora, that causes a person's death. The Gemara raises a question that lasts four lines. You can see this from the long she'ela question marking to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. Neimar pliga de'avua de Shmuel. Let us suggest that the source above is at odds with Avuah D'Shmuel's teaching. The Amar Avuah D'Shmuel, Omar Li Malach Hamoves, Ilo Dechayashno Liyakur Debraisa, Avuah D'Shmuel tells me that I was told by the angel of death that if I, the angel, was not concerned with the honor of people, that's Yakro, the honor, the Braisa of creatures, of people, have a parano beis hashchito kebehema, I would cut their necks open, wide open, like the slaughtering of an animal. So what the Malachamovas describes here is I do engage in some form of cutting, but I don't cut it wide open. From the source above, with the drop of the Tipa Shomora, it doesn't sound like there's any cutting taking place whatsoever. So the Gemara says, no, we don't have to say that the source is at odds with Avuah D'Shmuel. When the source made mention of the droplet of bitterness, Dilma Hi Tipa, it could very well be that Tipa Mechateches Lula Simonim does an act of cutting. Maybe it cuts away, it burns away. It's like in common terms, it would have be a, some type of, you know, acidic reaction where it as a result of its chemical composition, it cuts open the simonim, the trachea, esophagus of the victim. But for our purposes, without getting involved with any chemistry, the emphasis we've placed with our markings is under the word mechatcha, so that if Avuah D'Shmuel describes what the Malachamovas told him, that he does some kind of cutting, but it's an honorable cutting, it's not a wide open slash as slaughter, it could very well be that that's in fact what the Tipa Shomora accomplishes. It also does a cutting action. Mimeno Masriach. This is a quote from the source above, where we said that the droplet, the Tipa Shomora, causes the decomposition and the foul odor of a dead body. Mesayale, the Rabbi Chanina Bar Kahana. This supports Rabbi Chanina's teaching. Yom Rabbi Chanina Bar Kahana, Amri Bei Rav, Haroitze Shele Asriach Meso, one who wants to prevent his relative that's about to die from this foul odor developing, Yafchenu Alponov. He should be flipped over on his face, so that in that position, the Malachamovas and his drop won't have a chance to drop into his mouth. Tana Rabbanan. We have a Tanakh source that begins with the same pasuk that was cited at the beginning of the source at the bottom of Chof Amud Aleph, with a different continuation, though, as far as the source is concerned. Tana Rabbanan. Unishmarta mikol davar ra. This pasuk is presented in the Torah in proximity of the following, and Rashi quotes this. The pasuk goes on to say, "Ki ye." The pasuk says, "Ki ye becha ish asher lo ye tahor mikre laila." A male who becomes impure as a result of an emission. The Torah, therefore, is warning against bringing oneself into a position, into a situation where an emission may issue forth from him. So the pasuk has said, and we'll read it again, Unishmarta mikol davar ra. This teaches us shelo yahar odom biyom v'yovel lidei tuma balayla, that a person should not have thoughts concerning women during the daytime, because those thoughts concerning women can bring him to an emission at night. Mikan Omer Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yoyer. Based on this, Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yoyer establishes a certain hierarchy of levels of diligence and purity that a person is encouraged to adopt. Torah Mevia Lidei Zihirus. Through the study of Torah, one comes to a level of behavior known as Zihirus. Zihirus, Rashi explains, is a situation where if a person encounters a problematic situation, when a person encounters an Avera opportunity, he is Zohir, he is careful to keep himself from stumbling. the Rashi explains regarding the Torah, he mentions 2 points. One is al yedei she'oisek ba, the mere preoccupation of oneself with Torah helps to increase the person's spiritual heights to this level of zrizus. The oid, and furthermore, shiroya umevin azhoros shabo v'nishmar, through the study of Torah, he also develops an understanding of the mitzvos and knows how to guard himself. The next level, zehirus mevia lidei zrizus. If a person practices zehirus, then he will eventually come to the level known as zrizus. Zrizus is a situation where a person, before he encounters the avera, he already knows to take preemptive measures not to come into the situation where he is being tempted by a sin, by an avera. Zrizus mevia lidei nekius. One who practices zrizus, as we mentioned, the ability of keeping a distance from encountering problematic situations, this brings him to a level of nikius, of cleanliness. Cleanliness means clean without sin. Nikius mevia lidei precious. If one achieves nikius and experiences that leads to something called precious, which is a situation where a person separates himself even from things that are mutter, things that one is allowed to enjoy, and he practices, restrictions from even things that are allowed. That itself is a topic worthy of discussion, because we know that the nazir who restricts himself from wine, according to certain opinions, is considered a sinner because he is not partaking of things that God allows him to partake of. But for our purposes, even though we just raised that issue, there is something very praiseworthy about someone who will say reduces his enjoyment level from earthly matters. So that's what is termed as precious. Precious, the violi de tahara, one who lives a life of precious, comes to a state called taro, which is a higher level of purity than noki, which was mentioned before. Taro mevia lidei kedusha. Taro brings to a state referred to as kedusha, a level of sanctity, and kedusha mevia lidei anova, and that level of existence of kedusha brings one to humility. Anova mevia lidei yiras chet. When one achieves humility, he can then know how to fear sin. Yiras chet is fear of sinning. Yiras chet mevia lidei chasidus. And chasidus being a very high level of piety, as you can see in this list of different attributes, chasidus is something that one achieves quite a bit later on in the scheme of things. Chasidus mevia lidei ruach hakodesh. When one achieves chasidus, he then has an opportunity of achieving the next level, and that is one of divine inspiration. Ruach hakodesh mevia lidei tchias hameisim. With ruach hakodesh, one comes to a level at which he could he can participate. It seems from here, he himself will warrant the resurrection from the dead, or it could be that he himself might be capable of performing that. We in fact saw an example of that in a previous Gemara involving Rabbi Chanina, who was visiting with Rebbe at the time that Antoninus came by, and we saw that Rabbi Chanina was successful through prayer in reviving the dead. The Chasidus Gedola Mikulan. We've called this number one because another opinion will appear in the Gemara, but the observation here is that the greatest of these attributes is Chasidus. Shinema Oz Dibarta Bechazon LaChasidecha. It appears in this source that after Chasidus there are additional attributes. So in terms of it's being called the greatest of the attributes, it could be that in terms of greatest gaps in achieving the next level, from the stage prior to Hasidus, which we saw was Tara, from there to Hasidus involves the greatest jump forward, possibly. That may be a pshat here, or there may be other pshatim as well to explain this expression of Hasidus Gedola Mikulan, when in fact we see that there are attributes that are cited afterwards. Upliga Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the observation that Hasidus is Gedola Mikulan is at odds with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Yom Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Anova Gedola Mikulan. The attribute of humility is considered the greatest of the attributes. Shinemar, so he quotes a pasuk. Let's just bear in mind that the source quoted a pasuk involving Hasidus by saying Oz dibarta b'chazon la chasidecha, that the ones that were addressed in that pasuk were the Hasidim and none of the other attributes. In Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's case, he cites a pasuk that says Shinemar Ruach Hashem Elokim Olai Yan Moshach Hashem Osi Levaser Anovim, that God has anointed me to inform the humble. Chasidim lo ne'amar elo anovim. The Chasidim are not featured in this pasuk, rather anovim are featured. From the fact that they are featured and emphasized, we learn from here she'anova gedoylo mikula, that anova constitutes the greatest of these attributes. Ein moichrin lohen v'chulei. The Mishnah made mention of different things that are forbidden to sell to them, and the Mishnah mentioned Ein Mochlem Mechuba LaKarka. Tana Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source. In this source, we will see triangles used, and the topic heading and reason for the triangles is featured on the side of the Gemara. Let us glance at the side, the Nosei. Machlekes Tanoim ve'inyan mechiras dvar mechubor lekarka le'akum. We will see a Machlekes Tanoim, a Tanaic controversy concerning the issue of sales of items that are attached to the ground, sales of those items to an idol worshipper. Ha'im efshar lusmoch al Tanai almanas liktsoitz oi Moichrim Rak Kitzutza. Can one rely on the mentioning of a condition, that I'm selling you this on condition that you cut it, and that's sufficient? Or is the sale allowed only if it's actually cut? Moichrim Lohem Ilon Almanas Lokus Vekotseis, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda allows the sale even if at the point of the sale the item is still attached. I can sell it on condition that you the Gentile will cut it. Rabbi Meir Omer Ein Mochel Lehem Elok Tzitzur. Rabbi Meir is restrictive and says only if it's already cut, only if the tree is already cut. We should mention that the triangles and are explained in the outside margin under the Mivneh heading Dugmois Shel Dvarim Mechuborim, a list of examples of things that are connected. The next example, Shachas, Almanas lo ligzois v'gozeis divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Shachas is a reference to the to grain plants, wheat and barley, before they mature to their fullest extent. So Shachas is are grains in the early stages of their development. Shachas, in general, you find in the Shas, is something that's cut and offered to animals as feed. So the sale of Shachas to Gentiles, according to Rabbi Yehuda, can be made by merely issuing a condition that I'm selling this to you on condition that you cut it. Rabbi Meir, Omer, Ein Mochin Lahem Ela Gezuza. I'm not allowed to sell Shachas to them unless it's already has already been cut. Koma is a reference to grains that are fully developed. Almanas liktzor v'kotzer, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. I'm allowed to sell to the Gentile grains on condition that he harvests them, and he's expected then to harvest it. Rabbi Meir Omer, Ein mochrim ela ktzura. I'm not allowed to sell grains to Gentiles unless it has already been harvested. The Gemara here, as appears many, many times in Shas, what do I need all of these examples for? Utsricho. The Gemara declares, I need all of these examples. And we, with our squiggle underlines, as you can see in the upcoming Gemara, we bring out the beginning point of each one of these items. What would have I thought had I been told only one or a couple of them and not all of them? The Iash Me'inan, Elon, have the source taught me the Machlokis, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, concerning a tree. So, Behol Koma Rabbi Meir, here, in the case of the tree, I would have thought is the only circumstance under which Rabbi Meir is restrictive, is Machmir. Kevon Delo Posid Mashile. Since a tree, if it is left in the ground, doesn't go bad, it continues and continues and continues, it's Lo Posid, he will mashile, he will leave it there. And therefore, Rabbi Meir says, well, if you sell him an attached tree, he doesn't have any major incentive to cut it down, because by leaving it there longer and longer, it doesn't go bad. Aval hai, in the case of the koma, the mature grains, the chimashi lo posid, if you leave fully developed grains in the ground, eventually they start to rot. Hema modi le the rabbiuda. I might have thought, without having been taught Rabbi Meir's opinion in the case of Koma, I would have thought that he would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that it's possible to sell the grains, the fully developed grains, on condition, and that is sufficient. Therefore, it was necessary, in addition to the case of tree, to tell the to share or to teach over the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir concerning the fully developed grains as well. The Ashmin Bahani Tarti, had we taught their machlokes with regard to Elon and Koma, where we saw Rabbi Yehuda is lenient, Mishum de lo yadiyah shivchayu, the improvement that they experience while being left in the ground is not really noticeable. Aval shachas, the yadiyah shivchayu, the shachas plant, if one leaves it in the ground, the improvement is something that's very obvious. In other words, the longer you leave it in the ground, the more the shachas will grow, up till, of course, the point of full development. Emo, I might have thought that with regard to shachas, modi lei, the Rabbi Meir, that Rabbi Yehuda would say, don't rely on the tanai, don't rely on the condition, and sell him shachas, only sell the Gentile the shachas, only once it's already been cut. Because otherwise, there is a strong incentive for the Gentile to leave it in the ground. Therefore, it was important to teach the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir concerning shachas, especially to bring out the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda to show me how far he goes in his lenient opinion. The Ashmin and Baha, had we taught the machlokes Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda concerning shachas, Baha come Rabbi Meir. I would have thought that Rabbi Meir is restrictive only in the case of shachas because of this factor that its improvement is so noticeable. Aval Bahanoch, in the case of the tree and the standing grains, the fully developed matured grains, Ema Modi lay the Rabbi Yehuda. I might have thought that Rabbi Meir would concur with Rabbi Huda's opinion that it's possible to sell Elon and Koma while they're still attached and rely on the condition that I made with the Gentile. Tzricha, therefore, it's necessary to teach the other cases as well, the case of Elon and Koma, to present Rabbi Meir's opinion that one is not allowed to rely on the condition, and that one is allowed to sell it only once it's cut. Ibaya laho behemo almanas lishchot mahu. Up till now, we've seen restrictions in the sale of behemo gasas to goyim, and we saw that the issue involved the Shabbos-related matter of the animal. In the event that if I allow sales, we said I'll come to rentals or loaning the animal to the Gentile, and he'll come to work with it on Shabbos, or even in the case of sales, we saw the case of Nisuni, the dry run, so to speak, of the animal carrying something while Shabbos is setting in, which would have been an Isser of Mechamer. What about the sale of a behema gasa almenas lishchot, with the condition that, on condition that you will slaughter it, so that the issue of the animal let's say hanging around in the Gentile's possession won't be a factor, won't be cause of people thinking that here that it's mutter to buy animals, it's mutter to sell animals to the Gentiles, because if I sell it, almanas lishchot, so he'll slaughter it and it won't be around anymore. Hossam, the Gemara presents the two sides of the question, hence we have a little aleph here, and then ol dilma, or maybe, and then present the second side of the question. So, do we say as follows? Hossam, taima mai shori Rabbi Huda, delav birshusei kaimi. In the case of the tree and the plants that were attached to the ground, why is it that Rabbi Huda relies on the condition? Because after all is said and done, the tree that I sold to the goy or the grains that I sold to the goy, they are not standing in his domain. They are in the field owned by a Jew. V'lo motzi mashi lehu. The goy doesn't have the comfort of delaying and leaving it around, because the Jew is in control of the field in which these things are found. Ultimately, the Jew can either cut them down himself or put pressure on the goy to cut them down. Aval behema. But once a Jew sells his animal to the Gentile, and the Gentile brings it to his domain, to his house, to his farm, kevon debrushu se debrikachovim kaimo mashile. Then, when it's then in his domain, he will leave it around. And as we mentioned before, by leaving it around, it will then eventually, other Jews will see the formerly owned, Jewishly owned animal in the possession of the goy, and come to the conclusion that in general it's mutter to sell to goyim. So that's what we're worried about in the case of mashile, of his leaving it around. Oidilma lo shna, or maybe there is no distinction. And just like in the case of the plants, the attached plants, Rabbi Yehuda makes an allowance, based on the condition. So too, in the case of the sale of an animal, Rabbi Yehuda likewise will allow the sale, provided you make a condition that you will slaughter it. Tashma. So the Gemara now answers by citing a Tanaic source, Desanyo, the following brisa. Behemo amanas lishchot v'shochet, the very Rabbi Yehuda, that it, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it is allowed to, one is allowed to sell a behema with on condition that the Gentile slaughters it, and he is expected eventually then to slaughter it. So Rabbi Yehuda, we see, is consistently lenient in his allowance to rely upon a condition. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, Omer, Ein mochen lo ela shchuta. One is allowed to sell only that which is already slaughtered. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.